The House will come to order if members can take their seats.
This budget is a huge job maker, and the number one solution to economic insecurity is a job.
Hungry children can't learn, and it's our responsibility to try to help.
Equality and opportunity.
I believe most people are here because they want to do some good.
It's here, a brand new installment of the only podcast where members of the Majority Democratic Caucus in the Washington State House of Representatives sit down at the Capitol and talk about ideas. That's why we call it Capitol Ideas. Today's episode features Representative Brandi Donaghy. Brandi lives in Snohomish County and was sent to Olympia by her friends and neighbors in the 44th Legislative District. She's now a couple of weeks into her fourth session here in Olympia. She's a proud U.S. Navy veteran, she's an emergency preparedness consultant in her non-legislative life, and she serves as vice chair of the House Transportation Committee at the Capitol. We recorded this in Olympia on Friday, January 24th, 2025, and it goes like this. Welcome, Representative Brandi Donaghy from the 44th Legislative District. Welcome back to Capitol Ideas. It's been a little while since we've talked.
It has been. It's nice to talk to you again.
I think you might have been a first year or maybe in your first biennium for sure when we talked. How are things progressing for you?
I'm having a great time still, so that's really cool. And I've learned quite a bit, and I keep learning every day. And so for me, that is one of the coolest things in the world.
We're now 2 weeks deep into your fourth year in the state legislature, and I'm wondering, what's your opinion of what the last fortnight has been like?
Yeah, it's been quite busy. This is the first time I've come in when there's been a whole new administration, and so that's had definitely an impact on everything that we're seeing and doing. I remember sometime in the first week having to ask what day of the week it was, because it was already more hectic than it has been in some other years. But now I know what day it is, and so we're back on track, and things are going a lot more smoothly because we're back into that space where we all know what to do and what to expect.
Were you a vice chair of a committee last year?
Yeah, last year I was vice chair of two committees. I was vice chair of Innovation, Community Economic Development, and Veterans, and I was also vice chair of Transportation.
This is going to be a very different year as vice chair of Transportation because this is a budget year for the Transportation Committee. And that really will guide much of your activities for the rest of this 105-day session. Where are you on the budget right now?
We've been going over it. It takes a good while for us to get through everything because, you know, everything goes out and then it goes to the governor and then we get to see the governor's budget, but we're still looking at the old governor's budget. It could get a little bit more complicated as time goes on, but it's one of those things that takes a long time to work on. And gets a lot of input from a lot of various areas in order to do it right. And especially with a shortfall this year, it's going to make it even more difficult than it has been in past years.
Let's talk about some of what you're doing now outside of the Transportation Committee. You also sit on three other committees. Technology, Economic Development, and Veterans is one. Consumer Protection and Business is another. And you're also on the very key committee around here, the Education Committee. What's going on with you in the rest of your committee work?
I mean, there's a lot. This is my first year on education. I've been on some iteration of the other committees before, so a lot of learning is happening. And also because I have four committees, it kind of shrinks down my time for other stuff, so I've got to be a lot more careful about how I'm spending my time.
I'm going to ask a question just completely out of left field. What did you do in the Navy?
Aviation ordnance.
And what does that mean?
It means you would assemble weapons, work on weapon systems, load bombs, missiles, and even launchers onto aircraft.
I just wanted to get that in because I find it real interesting.
It is interesting. It was fun.
Now we'll go back to being in the state legislature. Which of the bills, you're sponsoring seven or eight bills at this point early in the session. I'm sure some more will come. But right now, out of the bills that you're sponsoring, pick a couple that you find particularly interesting and that your constituents might be equally interested in.
Honestly, I think they've all got something interesting going for them. That's one of the reasons that I'm running them is because they will be helpful. One of the more meaningful ones, I would say, is probably one to lower the blood alcohol level, which in Washington is currently 0.08 to 0.05. It's a bigger one, and it's also going to take a lot more work to make sure that everything works properly.
No bill around here is 100% popular, and I know this one won't be either. What kind of pushback are you getting?
I mean, there are always concerns about equity issues, especially when we look at anything that involves law enforcement, concerns that maybe this will be an opportunity for them to pull people over more often to use the excuse of the possibility of driving while intoxicated to look for other issues. I am kind of the opinion that if there is an officer that wants to do that, they're going to do it. They're going to pull you over no matter what. And I don't feel like this is giving them additional opportunities. There are also some concerns that might change how they police just in general. Again, this is not something that I have a whole lot of concern about, although I do understand communities have that concern, and I value it, and I think it is valid for them. It's not something that I have seen yet. And there are also concerns with the hospitality industry that they could lose business. There are concerns with the servers because they can be held personally liable for overservice. And they're worried that the decrease in the blood alcohol level could lead to an increase in liability for them, even though technically those two rules, their rule about overservice and the blood alcohol level that allows you to drive, they're completely separate, but it's easy to conflate them. And so that's a major concern for them.
It seems like someone who is visibly to the point that a bartender might worry about overserving, it would seem like that person is way over 0.05 or 0.08.
Absolutely. Typically, I mean, somebody who is 0.08, the whole thing is that it changes your reaction time. It changes a little bit as to maybe what you're looking at. Maybe it makes you just the tiniest bit more forgetful, but that's not something that a server is going to notice unless they know you very, very well. And so when we go from 0.08 to 0.05, you can't tell. You can't tell by looking at someone. You need a breathalyzer, you need a test strip, you need something else to be able to identify that. And so the idea of over-service is to keep from serving people until they're falling down drunk. It doesn't have anything to do with how people are going to leave the establishment. 0.05 and 0.08 kind of do. And so the message isn't don't go out and have a few drinks. It's don't go out, have too many drinks, get into your car and drive.
And in reality, a lot of people get arrested for driving under the influence. But the fact of a server being charged for over-serving is very rare.
It is rare. It is rare, but it can happen. And part of the problem is that they're held personally liable, which is different than, you know, an establishment may have insurance to cover that, but there isn't insurance for the individual servers. And so that's one of the reasons I really get that concern. And I am working on trying to find a way to address that to make sure that we are not inadvertently putting people out of work in order to try to keep more people safe, because putting people out of work isn't particularly safe either.
Moving to a different bill now, I find it kind of funny almost that you worked up a bill concerning lodging fees and transparency in lodging fees, and then something happened that was very surprising.
Yes, I pre-filed that bill, and the day after I pre-filed it, the FTC released new rules that covered everything in the bill.
So the federal government stepped in and said, we're taking care of this, and they didn't consult you about that, did they?
You know, I'm sure they were watching me, they saw my bill, and they just had to go with it.
Well, speaking of the federal government, and it may surprise people what comes out of my mouth next, I want to talk about Smokey Bear. You've got a bill that is going to make Smokey's face a little more visible in Washington State.
That's the hope, yeah. Smokey's an icon, right? Everybody looks at him and knows it's about forest fires, and only you can prevent them. So if we're seeing them all the time, maybe we're thinking about wildfire prevention.
And you've got a bill that's going to allow people to get custom license plates.
Yes, and the profit from those plates, that extra that goes beyond just the distribution and the creation of them would actually go to wildfire prevention. It's a bill that was originally requested by the Department of Natural Resources a year ago, and it's back again.
Where do you come down on the key controversy about, is it Smokey Bear or is it Smokey the Bear?
It's Smokey Bear. It's a proper name. Smokey is his first name and Bear is his last name, Smokey Bear.
You know that there are some diehard Smokey the Bear people that are never going to give in on this.
You know, I guess that's their prerogative. However, we all know it's Smokey Bear.
Case closed. What's up for the next 2 weeks on your itinerary? Don't look to the end of the session. Just tell me what's going on next.
Well, I have a few more bills I need to get out that I've been working on. So hopefully I can get all those out in time to be useful. Continuing to work on the budget and continuing to help push good legislation forward.
Is there anything you want to tease about those bills you have kind of in the pipeline?
I have one that I think is kind of cool. It's a little bit dorky. It's a, I call it invasive species light bill. So we often see that when people get pets, they don't always expect the requirements of keeping those pets happy and safe. And a lot of people will take them to shelters. Some people will just let them go. My bill is to require pet stores to provide information about places you can take your pet if you no longer want to keep it, as well as information on invasive species and the impacts that they can have in our communities. For example, there's an island or two in San Juan that's overrun with rabbits because they didn't have a natural predator. You can see goldfish dropped into a lake or a stream. They're carp. They get really big, and they're dirty. They pull plants. They make a complete mess. They can kill everything else in that ecosystem. And then in order to get rid of them, you got to kind of kill everything else. So to avoid having issues like that, or even more importantly, like the zebra mussels, there was an article in, I think it was the Seattle Times several months ago, where zebra mussels came in on a moss ball for an aquarium. So if you take your aquarium, you're done with it and you dump it. Those zebra mussels can be catastrophic to irrigation systems, to our dams. I mean, they can do huge amounts of damage. And the state is investing a lot of energy and money into trying to avoid letting them take over, like the Columbia River area. So it's interesting how something you get at a pet store because you just want to have some fun can actually really have a huge impact on our state's economy. So I want to make sure that people are educated. I don't think that, you know, people are going, I'm just going to set this loose because I don't want it anymore. And haha, you're going to damage the environment. I think really a lot of times they don't understand the impacts. And so I think public education is key in understanding the impacts of many of the things that we do. And so if I can help get that a little bit further along, that's what I'm going to do.
You know, I remember reading when the zebra mussel problem started, and my first thought was, what harm are they going to do? And what I realized was, they're very tiny. They get inside water conduits,
yep.
And they clog things that shouldn't be clogged, creating huge problems.
Mm-hmm.
And they breed like rabbits.
Yep. And because their initial state is so tiny, it's a huge amount of work to try to keep them out of our spaces.
So the moral of the story is be careful.
Yeah, be thoughtful about what you do with your animals and your plants and your everything else.
You have another bill that I think is very important, and this has to do with a phenomenon that I think has developed over the last several years, which is people contacting homeowners. Generally, these are either low-income homeowners or aging homeowners or both, and making kind of a low ball, hey, we'll give you some cash for your house. Isn't this great? If a person is a willing seller and they find a willing buyer, that's one thing. In a situation like this where there may be a little bit of subterfuge involved, you've got a bill that's going to address this industry.
Yeah. And, you know, I think there are valid reasons to solicit purchasing somebody's property. I'm not at all convinced that everybody that is in it is trying to be predatory towards certain more vulnerable homeowners. But I do think that this is about education again. when we make a decision, it's helpful to have all of the information. And so what my bill does is it essentially requires those prospective buyers to inform sellers, prospective sellers, of their right to have an appraisal. And also those prospective buyers would have to cover the cost of an appraisal that is done by a licensed appraiser in Washington State. This way, people have the opportunity to find out how much their property is actually worth, and then they can make the educated decision whether or not to sell it. And, you know, they don't have to choose to have their property appraised. It's just a tool that would be there for them to make that decision if they wanted to, so that they have a little bit more power going into the transaction.
And there's a little bit of a grace period in this bill, too, isn't there?
Yeah. Say you find out your mother just agreed to something, and she's 87, and it was because some nice man asked her to. It provides the opportunity for people to reconsider, and it also provides the opportunity to protect more vulnerable sellers.
Sounds like a reasonable bill. Have you had a public hearing on this bill yet?
I did have a public hearing the same day as the one that the FTC kind of overran. That was Brandy Day in that committee.
And what kind of testimony did you hear?
I haven't had any real pushback about it. The biggest issues that we had initially involved realtors not wanting to get tied up, and they have a whole bunch of rules that they have to follow that would prevent them from creating the situation in the first place. And so we had already hammered all of that out. At this point, I haven't heard anything negative.
Sounds good.
Yeah, I think it does.
I'm sure most people wish they could say that about their bills. We need to wrap up. I know that caucus is going to start in not too many minutes from now, and it's a
3 minutes ago.
It's a very important one today, or 3 minutes ago. Yeah. Would you like to add anything before I do the part where I say thank you for being here?
One thing that I'm always thinking about is I think this is the coolest job in the world. Like I can talk to people, find out what they need, find out what their challenges are, and help find ways to make it easier for them and other people like them. And I wouldn't give up the opportunity to do this for anything.
Before we go, tell me about the 44th District, and then I will let you go.
Well, I mean, the 44th might be towards the end of the list because we only have 49, but it's really the coolest out of all of them. We just kind of like to save the best for towards the last. It is incredibly diverse. We've got farms, we've got suburbs, we've got cities, and they're all a little bit different and unique. It's got some of the best people I've ever met.
Well, Brandy, I appreciate you coming by again to talk with me on the microphones here. I don't think it'll be the last, but let's put off the next one for a year or so, and we'll both be back. We've been talking with Representative Brandy Donaghy, District 44 in Washington State. This has been a great talk. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's Representative Brandy Donaghy, and that's episode 2503 of Capital Ideas. I hope you felt that was time well spent, and I hope you'll come back for more. This is your state government, and what happens here matters, now maybe more than ever. If you haven't subscribed to Capital Ideas, you can do so on the major podcast sites or just visit the caucus webpage at housedemocrats.wa.gov and hit the media button at the top of the page. When that opens a menu, hit Capital Ideas, and there you are. I'm Dan Frizzell for the Washington State House Democrats, putting people first since 1889, the year George Eastman sold the first Kodak camera. Thanks for listening.